I'm not sure if any of you have ever had conversation with your non-Catholic friends about church or your religion, but there is a difference that comes up in the conversation. And the first thing is most non-Catholics say, "We are going to church." Whereas Catholics nearly always say, "We're going to Mass." Catholics rarely say, "We're going to church." And as a result of that understanding, it's a bit easier for us to understand some of the words from the Second Vatican Council, where the fathers of the Church say that the Eucharist, the body and blood of Christ, is the source and the summit of our faith. The source, and it is the summit. It is from our Eucharist that we gain our unity and our identity. Now, to understand the body and blood of Christ, we could easily turn a homily into a lecture, because it is very complex in some sense and it's very simple in another. I'll start with the simplicity. It requires faith. So therefore, there will be elements of this simplicity that we won't fully grasp. But in our heart of hearts, we believe. We be what we live. We believe. And if for nothing else, that you're when you grasp with the understanding of the mystery of the Eucharist, then take that with you. Be what you live. Saint Augustine used to say, "The body of Christ, become what you receive." And now I could end my homily there. I could quite easily, and you're probably hoping I do. It's not going to happen, because there is so much in understanding the mystery of the Eucharist. And it's a wonderful privilege to be able to have this conversation with little children, because they don't ask the same questions as adults do. They are a little more accepting, and they are more carried away with First Communion, with the joyousness of the event. And it seems to me that as adults, as we get older and older, and I've said this before, it's interesting because the older we get, when people come to Communion, it seems quite often the sadder they look, the more burdensome it seems to be. And I would love for adults to come to Communion, and many do in this church, because I've said this before. You might be too scared not to. But to receive the Blessed Sacrament, to receive the body and blood of Christ into our very self, is the highest joy and the highest privilege that one could think of, in my opinion. But the mystery that we talk about is sometimes lost in what it is that we're actually doing. Now, I look at the scriptures, particularly Mark's gospel, and I'm always asking questions. Sometimes I find answers and sometimes I don't. That's okay, that's fine. But when it comes to the gospel accounts of the institution of the Eucharist, and even in Paul's letters, and Paul's letters were written about the Eucharist to his communities before any of the Gospels were. There's one thing that is in common. And the first thing is that it's about the timing of the events of the institution of the Eucharist. And it's always at Passover. And I look at Passover and then I think, why is it that by the time Paul wrote his letters, less than 30 years in some cases, probably around about 30 to 40 years after Jesus died, the believers already had an understanding of what the Eucharist was and what it is in their life? That is incredible when you think of the history of the Hebrew people and their understanding that to drink blood, which is the most sacred thing, to drink blood would be an abomination. Yet within such a short time, these people, with all of their heritage and understanding, accepted, well, I should say some, accepted that they were receiving and eating the body and blood of Christ. How could that be? That's a huge step. And I think the answer lies in the fact, unlike ourselves, the Jews, those first Christians, understood all of the significance that was mentioned in the Old Testament, particularly in the Exodus story. So if we go back and we look at the Exodus story, and I'm not going to turn this into a lecture, but there are three elements in the Exodus story that are so significant to, I think, their quick understanding that they were receiving truly the body and blood of Christ. And that might help us today understand that we are receiving the body and blood of Christ. Because statistics show us from research that something like 48% of Catholics don't believe that they're really receiving the body and blood of Christ. For those that have answered the surveys that go out, they think it's a symbol. That's astonishing. It's also very sobering from my point of view. So I hope that in this experience of Eucharist tonight, we can start to deepen our faith and deepen our understanding. The three areas that are significant that the Hebrew people understood, the Jews understood when they became deep followers of Christ, were firstly the Passover itself, mentioned in Exodus. So the Passover was celebrated every year. Jesus instituted the Eucharist and the priesthood at Passover. Now, most of you will remember parts of the story of Passover. The angel passed over and the firstborn were killed throughout Egypt, except if they had the blood of the lamb, an unblemished lamb, over the door. And they were spared because they were the Hebrew people. So Jesus institutes this sacrament and the priesthood at Passover. That's very, very significant. But when we look at the Passover in the upper room, two of the major elements are actually missing. They're not there. They don't get a mention in any of the Gospels. And the first of those is actually the priesthood. When Passover is celebrated, the youngest member in the household asks the oldest member of the household, "Why is this night special?" And then the answer is very simple, because this is the night, and I'm just rephrasing, this is the night that the Lord passed over and brought us out of the land of Egypt, and we must never forget that. And the blood of the lamb was placed over the doorposts, but the father who answers that question, which is the eldest, he acts in the place of the priest. There were not Levitical priests at that stage. He acts in the place of the priest. So the people got that. The Jews understood that Passover, you need a priest and you need a lamb. And all of a sudden we have no priest. Jesus is the priest. And he gives that priesthood to the 12, they're specifically mentioned, even to Judas, at that meal. The second thing that if you scratch your head and you think, well, what else is missing? The most obvious thing is also missing, and that is a lamb. There is no lamb. There is no blood over doorposts. The two things that are needed to celebrate Passover, a priest and a lamb, they're not there. Because the people now understood through the words of Jesus that he was the lamb as well. And I understand that this is getting a little bit heavy for perhaps some people, perhaps not for others. But they understood within a very short time that Jesus fulfilled everything, as Kathy read in the second reading, the covenant, the promise. Jesus fulfilled that by becoming the priest, what we would call the high priest. There was no need for the priests looking after the temple. And there was no need for any blood sacrifices. So lambs and goats and bulls, don't need any of that stuff. because one person's blood in the body of Christ will be spilt forever for all. Not for just you 12, but for all. And the early believers and followers of Christ after his resurrection understood that they were bought into that very event. How did that happen? Because Passover is only completed when you eat the lamb. You don't look at it, take a photo, send it to your mates like people do these days. You consume, you eat the lamb. That's the task that completes Passover, is the actual eating. We call that communion. And they understood that. Now, the precious blood and the precious body of the one who made the sacrifice for me is part of me. I am in union with it. I am together in communion with it. And that's why, as a priest, sometimes I do find it challenging when somebody comes forward and they'll say, look, I'm not able or I'm not worthy to receive communion. I find that very challenging, particularly if I ask somebody about coming into, say, being an extraordinary minister of the Eucharist, and they say, I'm not worthy to do that. And you may have heard me say before that my response to that would always be, you are more worthy to receive the body of Christ than what I am to give it. That's the depth of the union that we share in Corpus Christi, in the body and blood of Christ. We as a people must never do anything to damage that relationship. And perhaps in history we have at times. And that is part of the new covenant, the new promise that we make, is to not just repair the damage, but make sure that we never do that again. That we create every possibility for people to come into union, to come into communion with us. There are some challenges there, as there were back in Jesus' day, and we work together. I think the important thing is to remember the union in communion. We become one with Jesus because he died for us and washed away all of my sins as well as everybody else's. This is not exclusive. This is common, and it brings us together. It is communion.